It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Route 6 in Iowa stretches from the Mississippi River in Davenport to the Missouri River in Council Bluffs. It passes through some of the most beautiful parts of our state and has many, many stories to tell. A new documentary, River to River, Iowa's Forgotten Highway, from Fourth Wall Films and filmmakers Kelly and Tammy Rundle, premieres on Thursday, September 17th, at the Putnam Museum in Davenport at 7 p.m. And Kelly and Tammy have taken a break from putting the final touches on the film to actually come in and talk with me today. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Appreciate it.
Also with us, Dave Darby. He's executive director of the Iowa Division of the Route 6 Tourist Association, was very involved in researching and putting this film together as well. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Charity. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
And throughout the hour, we're going to talk about the history of Route 6. We're going to talk about some of the many attractions along the way. We also want to hear your stories. Did you grow up on Route 6? Have you traveled Route 6? What are some of your favorite stops, some of your favorite sites along the way? Questions you may have about some of the legends that are told about things that happened along Route 6? Give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I want to go back to the very beginning of this road, which really starts with a legend. So, Dave, tell me how Route 6 got started in the early days before it was called Route 6.
Well, back in the old days, Iowa was known as the gumbo state. It was rainy. When it was raining, it was just a muddy quagmire. When it was summertime and dry, it was this dusty, crazy thing to drive on. The Glidden Tour was getting ready to cross Iowa, actually across the United States, and come across Iowa. And a group of people from Des Moines formed the Good Roads Association. And on one day, June 25th of 1910, 10,000 farmers and volunteers across the state gathered at 9 a.m. on a Saturday. And 1 hour later, the River to River Road was born.
So this highway was built in 1 hour.
So the legend says.
and what I can only imagine that being called the gumbo state, that first surface that was put down was pretty vulnerable to becoming gumbo, but it was fresh and new at that moment.
Well, that's correct. They had what they called a king's drag. It was these planks that they would drag behind a horse or a steam tractor, and it would put a crown on the road and allow the water to drain off. And this was actually studied around the world after this big feat. I mean, this river-to-river road was a really big deal. It was in all the news at the time, as it were.
So put it in perspective. I mentioned earlier that, you know, we sing songs about Route 66. And, of course, the Lincoln Highway has gotten a lot of attention, has a lot of mystique surrounding it. Put Route 6 in perspective for us, along with those other roads. When was it built in reference to the Lincoln Highway?
Well, Route 6 was born of the Roosevelt Highway Association. I don't know exactly what year, but when the U.S. highway system was formed in 1926, Route 6 originally just went from Provincetown, Massachusetts to a point in New York and then Pennsylvania, and later came into Iowa around the 30s, and in 1937 became fully transcontinental and was the longest highway ever built in America, 3,652 miles. So it's twice as long as Route 66. In fact, we like to say half the digits, twice the kicks.
There we go.
Nice. And when it was built, I mean, it was long, but it wasn't necessarily the most direct route for a lot of people.
That's correct.
So did that diminish the popularity of Route 6?
Yeah, possibly. George R. Stewart wrote a book called A Travel Across America, and he originally thought about taking US 6, and he said, this road meanders from nowhere to nowhere, so I'm going to take Route 40 instead. But I can tell you that Jack Kerouac took it from Joliet, Illinois to Omaha, Nebraska.
So that meandering from nowhere to nowhere was an advantage for some people. And you think that's a little bit of an advantage as well, right?
Yes. I call it the Rodney Dangerfield of highways myself.
So, Kelly, when did you guys get involved? How did this become a Fourth Wall Films project?
We were screening our film Country School, One Room, One Nation at the Onward in Maquoketa. And Dave came up to us afterward and suggested it as a topic. And I often say we don't look for topics in a way. They seem to sneak up on us and find us, and that was how that happened. So we have a little different way of looking at the story. You know, we're trying to figure out how to take the story that Dave tells, for example, and digest it into something that's 55 minutes long and that people will enjoy visually, you know. So right away we discovered there were lots of stories to tell, and actually the difficulty was really in sort of narrowing it down to a certain number of stories that we could tell in less than an hour.
Really? So there were so many things that you had to weed some out. And Tammy, as you guys were doing this research, what kind of sources were you going to? I mean, obviously Dave, but where else were you looking for some of the stories of Highway 6?
We would go to the towns where a lot of these stories took place. We would meet with people in historical societies, and we'd look into their libraries and archives, and they shared a lot of wonderful information with us. Dave was our main consultant, and I want to add that on top of him talking to us about the story of Highway 6, that a lot of his incredible photographs really captured our attention. And we are dealing in a visual medium, so it really helped us to see how the film was going to flesh out visually, which has been spectacular.
Well, and we'll dig into some of these stories in just a moment. But in defining what stories sort of affiliate themselves with Highway 6, what was your criteria? Because, you know, you're telling the stories of people who live near Highway 6 along the way. You tell the stories of some of the really amazing things that happened along the way. But what were you looking for?
Some of the stories I think are obvious because they're famous people or famous events. And then, you know, the thing that we really enjoy telling, I think, are sort of the forgotten stories and stories that people might not be aware of. And there's so many of those as you look into the Highway 6 story that, again, it's kind of hard to pick and choose. But because we're making a film, a documentary, a visual product, then often available visual material is a key thing. So we're able to move ahead on a story because we have that material.
Well, one of the stops along Highway 6 that a lot of people in Iowa know about, a lot of people everywhere seem to know about, Wilton's Candy Kitchen. And I'll play just a short clip from the film that gives you a little bit of the history of Wilton's Candy Kitchen.
This is the oldest ongoing ice cream parlor in the world. Ari McIntyre started it in 1860 as a confectionery, and it is still a confectionery. And it was started 1 year before the Civil War and the year that Abraham Lincoln was elected President of the United States.
And then in 1909 or 10, in that area, my father came out here to a fair one day, and the sign was on the door closed. So him and a friend, they bought the place then. So we've been here ever since.
All right, just a moment from your stop at Wilton's Candy Kitchen. And I can imagine that was pretty much a no-brainer. You knew you had to go there, right? Did you guys have any kind of a history with Wilton's Candy Kitchen?
Not personally. And it was the first, I think the first thing we shot was the first cruise in 2011. So the Candy Kitchen was number two.
I think actually the first thing we shot was actually at the Candy Kitchen.
Yeah, it was.
Okay. It was, yes.
So I guess that's how obvious it was.
So how about, was it your idea, Dave, to go there?
Oh, absolutely. The Candy Kitchen was one of the things I first discovered while starting on my book. And I met George and learned the amazing history of this place.
And we were just hearing Thelma and George,
yes,
who, of course, Napolis, who were the longtime owners of Wilton's Candy Kitchen. We just heard both of their voices there.
Yes, and George just passed away here a couple months ago. A deep loss for everyone. We're still reeling from it.
Yeah, yeah. But it's such an incredible place because it has not just been in their family for so long, but even before that. I mean, 150 years for an ice cream parlor is really an incredible story. Why do you think Wilton's Candy Kitchen has endured like it has?
I think it's the people who ran it. George was such an amazing character. He would sing and whistle, and he was funny, and he had this dry sense of humor. And this is one of the things, one of the reasons behind what we do is when you go to an ice cream store, typically a chain ice cream store. You come out of there with the ice cream. You don't remember who served it to you. When you go to a mom and pop place like the Candy Kitchen, you remember George. You take a little bit of George home with you. You came away with more than that. You came away with George's stories, George's jokes, and you want to come back there not just for the ice cream but for more George and Thelma because they are such strong personalities. And that's the reason behind, I think, why the three of us are doing what we're doing is to make people aware of what they're missing by being out on that interstate and going to the chain restaurants and having the same old every day to break out of that rut, meet new people, and enrich your life.
Now, one of the things you guys are doing with this film is you're including things that some people might consider to be outtakes. And Thelma was being very funny during the interview, and she was talking about when, because many, many famous people have stopped through Wilton's Candy Kitchen over the years, and you can sit in the very seat that Gregory Peck once sat in at the Candy Kitchen. And she was talking about Gregory Peck kissing her on the cheek. And then she said, but I don't remember what happened next because I passed out. And then she said, but don't use that. That's pretty racy.
Right, cut that out.
So I had to talk her into.
Yeah, Tammy negotiated it right there.
I said, you can't. You cannot make us cut that out. That's wonderful.
Right.
And she said, well, okay.
So don't tell George.
Right.
But was that a conscious decision with this film to have a different tone, a different approach, more of a playful approach?
Yeah, I think people are used to bringing some, you know, three hankies at least for our films. And this one just has a different feel. It's more fun. And a lot of the visuals, some of the historical photographs that we've chosen are chosen in that spirit as well. And in the same way, somehow traveling that road from east to west, we were reconnecting with a lot of our other subjects. And so it became a journey for us as well through our past.
Well, we'll talk more about that in just a moment. We'll take a short break. We're talking today about the new documentary, River to River, Iowa's Forgotten Highway. We're talking about Route 6, stretches across the state of Iowa from Davenport to Council Bluffs. With me, filmmakers Kelly and Tammy Rundle and Dave Darby, executive director of the Iowa Division of the Route 6 Tourist Association. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about historic Route 6 in Iowa, stretching from the Mississippi River to the Missouri River, talking about some of the many stories that you can encounter along the way. With me today, filmmakers of Fourth Wall Films, Kelly and Tammy Rundle. Their new documentary is called River to River, Iowa's Forgotten Highway, and it premieres on Thursday at the Putnam Museum in Davenport on the giant screen at 7 p.m. on Thursday. They're here with me. Dave Darby is also here, executive director of the Iowa Division of the Route 6 Tourist Association. And before we talk about some of the more of the stories that show up in the film, Dave, how did the idea of trying to create a tourist movement along Route 6 come about? You're calling it Iowa's Forgotten Highway, and it really was for a while.
It really was. You know, at one time, Highway 6 was the way everybody got across Iowa. Then the interstate was built, and everybody just kind of migrated over there. I grew up on Highway 6. As a young boy, I would listen to the traffic go by from my window. Back then, we didn't really have air conditioning. You could hear through the screens, and it was neat. You'd hear these hot rods driving by and the trucks, and I'd wonder where they were going, having no idea.
And what town were you in?
In Davenport, Iowa.
Okay. So right at the start in Iowa.
Yes. And I had no idea it was the longest highway. I remember driving into Illinois once 30 years ago, and it really goes this far. It goes to Annawan? And then I learned, oh, it goes to Des Moines. And then one day I was in Danbury, Connecticut, and there's U.S. Highway 6. It's like, holy smokes. So I looked it up on the map, and sure enough, it was the longest highway ever. And one day I decided, well, you know, they've moved the Highway 6 around a lot in Iowa. They've moved about a third of it out to Interstate 80, just the signs, not the road.
Right.
And I thought, well, I want to explore this. I'm going to bring my camera with me, and I'm just going to see what's out there. And then I started wanting to get the stories, and I started stopping in these little mom-and-pop restaurants. And then I saw something really amazing, and I said, we have this wonderful secret that nobody knows about. We've got these terrific mom-and-pop places to eat, the Candy Kitchen, the Carnforth Inn, the Ladora Bank Bistro, Candyland Station, the Weather Vane, all these great little places with these neat owners that tell you these great stories They have this terrific history. It's so much better than going to the sea of driving down the interstate. Oh, there's McDonald's,
right,
McDonald's.
Right,
oh,
right.
Look, a Subway. And then here's something different in every town that you can experience. I thought, we need to let other people know about this. And plus, the experience of driving, it's so relaxing to just get on this two-lane road and it feels like you're at home. And you're seeing the scenery and it's keeping your mind going. It's feeding you something to look at every minute. Where when you're on the interstate, it's this monotony, repetitive over the overpasses and the green signs and the exit ramps. And that's all you see. One town looks the same as another town. And that's not what travel's about. It's about the journey.
Well, I think that people might debate you on that. It sounds like you're advocating for a return to an older kind of travel, because so often now it really is, okay, I have 2 hours to get from here to Des Moines and I'm going to, you know, get on I-80. That gives me time to stop and get one cup of coffee, you know, or something like that. That's just how we operate. So in starting to talk to people about, you know, you should get off the interstate, you should try traveling Route 6, who do you think you were appealing to? Was it a nostalgia idea for a lot of people? Like, oh, hey, we used to do that when I was a kid.
Well, possibly, but I hope not. I really want to see people of the – there's a generation of people who know nothing but the interstate. And those are the people we really want to reach. And we want to show them that there's life beyond the interstate. That extra couple minutes will actually feel like a shorter trip. Might actually add a few years to your life because of the reduced stress. And you're getting something from the trip that you wouldn't get from the interstate. You're actually getting to see the real America, the real Iowa, that's not flat and boring like it looks from Interstate 80.
Now, anybody who's ever tried to travel a historic highway knows that you're going to encounter some problems. I mean, this is the way with the Lincoln Highway as well. You're following it. You're driving. This is so interesting. And then, oh, wait, where has it gone? So that was a problem with Route 6 too, right?
That is. And it's a bit of an ongoing problem because we don't have the entire original route signed. And you're going to find yourself on County Road F46 or whatever other F48, whatever alphabet soup jargon you're going to run into. But we've gone a long way in the last 3 years in terms of getting it to where you can pretty much follow it across Iowa now and be fairly true to it and not have to drive on Interstate 80 at all, which is a plus.
So what kind of effort has it taken to get these old signs or new signs up along the old route?
Well, we've been pretty lucky. We've had a lot of people who've taken interest in the project. We've had chambers, convention and visitors bureaus. We'd like to thank the Iowa City Coralville Convention and Visitors Bureau for actually paying for the signage that went up in the Iowa City Coralville area. They are thanks to their generosity that we have Iowa City signed. We've had a lot of people just donate, just regular people. We've had some people apply for grants. Businesses have donated money. None of this funds for the signs comes from taxpayer dollars. This has all been a grassroots effort from small businesses and chambers and individuals.
Now, I was in Brooklyn, Iowa over the weekend, which is on Route 6, and there were two signs. One was for, it said Highway 6, and one that said Old Highway 6. So has that been a struggle too, to try to get the signage that really people can use to figure out where to go if they want to follow that old route?
Actually, it kind of was. Until all the signs were up, there was a general rule people just follow the black and white Route 6 signs. And it's such a beautiful stretch between Victor and Brooklyn that we had to sign it. There's so many beautiful hills and curves. And then you also have Victor and Carnforth and Brooklyn in between these quaint little towns. And they'd been bypassed since 1956, nearly 60 years. And we were very lucky that some business owners in Brooklyn and their chamber and Poweshiek County in general got together and came up with the funds to sign virtually all of Poweshiek County from where Old Six diverges just west of Ladora to the west end of Poweshiek at west of Grinnell.
Well, and like I said, in Brooklyn, it looks like it's been really embraced. There's a big wall-size mural that tells you you're on historic Route 6. So I can imagine you've met with some real enthusiasm, too.
Yes, we have. That mural would be Rusty Clayton from the hardware store there. And he's been a big supporter of our cause, and he was one of the driving forces behind getting the signs put up. We owe him a debt of gratitude.
And you've also created an opportunity for people to travel together, especially with classic cars, to really try to recreate the experience of traveling Route 6.
That's correct. And it was actually born of the documentary.
Really?
Yes. When we had first conceived it, we had seen a documentary around that other highway, or the one with two sixes. And the thing that struck us about it was there was a lot of gabbing in there in interviews, and it was a six DVD set, but there was only about 15 seconds of the road. And we thought, you know, the road's kind of the star of the movie here because it's the thread that brings everyone together. And we want people to see the difference between what Iowa looks like from Route 6 compared to what it looks like from the interstate. So we thought, well, let's get some classic cars together to ride on this road for a little bit of, you know, eye candy. And so we put this cruise together, and it kind of took off on its own. It's called the River to River Retro Road Trip because we encourage people to dress in vintage clothing, if they would, match the era of their cars. It doesn't always happen, but it's a neat deal because we're kind of returning to the old way of travel. So every year we get pretty close to 100 cars together, classic cars, and we drive across Iowa on only the original Route 6, and we eat at mom-and-pop restaurants.
So how long have you been doing this?
This will be the fifth year.
All right. And and this year's Retro Road Trip starts right after the premiere of the film, right? So it starts on September 18th?
That's right.
That's correct. We leave Friday on the 18th, Friday morning, and we head to Tiffin, Iowa for lunch, and then off to Marengo to the Pioneer Museum, and then overnight in Newton.
So when you guys decided to put the film together, obviously Dave had a vision for seeing more of the road in the film. I've only gotten to see bits and pieces of the film. As I said, you're taking a break from putting the finishing touches on it. So when it's all finished by Thursday night, is it sort of a chronological trajectory across the state, or what is your vision?
Yeah, that is the way it's constructed. We start the journey in Davenport, and we travel across historic Highway 6 to Council Bluffs. So there's a kind of a linear telling of the story of the history of Highway 6 in between the stories which are not in a linear way. I mean, in other words, we tell them as we encounter them.
In the different towns.
Yeah. So, you know, when we arrive in Dexter out on the western side, that's when we tell the Bonnie and Clyde story.
And we will talk about Bonnie and Clyde, because I know that's one of Highway 6's most famous and beloved stories.
Probably is,
yes.
But before you get that far, you do stop in West Branch at the Herbert Hoover Library and Museum. And Herbert Hoover played a big role in highway travel in the United States.
Yeah, and West Branch, of course, a few miles off Highway 6, but still might be something that people would stop and see. And his story, again, that's not the story that we normally would hear about Hoover, and so that's why it interested us. And we take for granted simple things that current laws are consistent from state to state, and back in Hoover's day, they were not.
So the example that you use in the film that I found very striking was, of course, now when you see a red light, you know that you hit the brake because red means stop and green means go. But as people were traveling across the nation, sometimes red meant go and green meant stop.
That's what they say. And also they did a little test. The Hoover folks did. He was in the Department of Commerce, I believe, at the time. And they did a test where they sent two drivers across country, one going east and one going west. And they both ended up with 20 or 30 citations because you just didn't know when you were entering a new jurisdiction if the laws were going to be the same.
And pleading ignorance apparently didn't.
Apparently not a successful defense.
Not successful. So how did Herbert Hoover work to fix that?
Well, and I don't know all the details about that, except that the idea was, hey, we need standardization. And so that was the key, really. That was the turning point. And I think there was a kind of a public outcry just about the dangers of driving in those days, and not having this road standards was part of the problem.
Well, and you mentioned Iowa was known for gumbo. I mean, beyond some of the regular hazards, I mean, of course, people were popping tires constantly. They were getting mired in the mud constantly. But they also were driving these vehicles that weren't necessarily all that reliable. So having your brakes suddenly not work was pretty common too, wasn't it, Dave?
And that's correct. And the brakes on those early cars were plan your stop, oh, maybe a day in advance. So you weren't going to just stop on a dime like today's cars would. So a horse running out in front of you could be a definite hazard.
So when Route 6 was built across Iowa, was it welcome by people in Iowa? I can imagine that in some small towns it seemed like a terrible hazard to have cars driving through.
I think it was pretty much welcomed. I think it brought a lot of commerce and trade. You know, it enabled people to go from town to town and bring their goods from town to town. It enabled the type of interstate commerce we have today. So I would say, yes, it was. And there was a lot of competition to have these, as they called them, auto trails back in the day. They were named auto trails, and they would paint a symbol on a banner on a phone pole. And that's part of the reason they started standardizing things and giving the highways numbers, because there was this confusing menagerie of different colored symbols on a phone pole. There's a picture of it, I think, on the University of Iowa website of a pole somewhere in downtown Iowa City, and there's probably 12 different banners on this pole. And you're like, all right, which road are we on exactly?
Maybe nobody knows.
Yeah.
So when Dave came to you with this idea and you eventually embraced it, had you guys traveled Route 6 before?
No. I mean, not that I recall.
Probably not really thinking about it. We probably
used parts of it, right?
Yeah, right. But no, I would say no.
My highway, two-lane highway experience was Highway 61, because my family was from Wisconsin and we would travel up there. So I have those kind of childhood memories of two-lane travel and waysides, for example, not rest stops, but waysides. And so this seems familiar to me. It feels familiar for that reason.
In planning for the film and then making the film, how many times do you think you've traveled it now?
Oh, my gosh.
Several. Several times.
Now we purposely make the choice that we want to get on Highway 6. You know, you get on the interstate and you have this idea, oh, I'm going to get there faster. But it's like, you know what? I'm a wreck when I get done. And so we get off and we enjoy the ride. And it's not that much more time.
And, of course, we're in our Iowa City studios this morning. You guys came in from Davenport. So you drove Route 6 this morning.
We did.
Yes.
Want to stay true to the cause.
I mean. Right.
But truly, I mean, there's only one interstate I dislike more than 80, and that's Interstate 5 in California. And they're both a little bit of a fist fight, you know, as you travel.
A little bit.
So what's your favorite spot on Route 6 now?
I love taking the Southwest Iowa trek. It's just so scenic and beautiful. And I really enjoy getting off on those old little towns. And that's where you really get an idea of what America was like. And there are just all these little gems along the way to see. That's my favorite trek.
It's a little bit like time travel. You know, you can get in your car and it's of course, it enhances it if you have a vintage automobile. But it's no different than people who reenact Civil War battles or whatever it might be. It's a way of putting yourself into a place that's in the past. But, of course, there's a contemporary setting here we're talking about. We're always looking for stories that are from the past, but that we can demonstrate this connection. Because otherwise, why do people care about history if they can't see how they're connected to it?
Well, in a lot of these little towns that were prosperous partly because they were on Route 6, then as the highway got rerouted and the interstates were built, and then, of course, the farm crisis of the 1980s, there were a lot of blows that hit a lot of these little towns really hard. Do you find, Dave, that some of these little towns are bouncing back a little bit because of the tourist attraction?
Well, that's our hope. I mean, because I have seen a lot of these towns that are dwindling away to almost nothing, and we do want to get that little last ember back to a flame again. And I think we're helping. It's certainly our goal. And, you know, Kelly mentioned Route 61, you know, it goes north-south. It's the Blues Highway, actually. And I would like to kind of draw a comparison because 61 used to be a beautiful little two-lane highway too at one time. And now if you drive up and down Iowa on this thing or Route 20 or Route 34, you'll find that it's a four-lane highway that's very similar to the interstate. It bypasses all the towns and it's pretty much a straight shot. And it's just as much fun to drive on in Interstate 80, where the original six is still pretty close to the way it was laid out back in 1910. It's not that far off from it.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Dave Darby and Kelly and Tammy Rundle. We'll be back in a moment talking about Route 6. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about historic Route 6 across Iowa from Davenport to Council Bluffs. The new documentary, River to River, Iowa's Forgotten Highway, tells the story of Route 6, put together by Fourth Wall Films and filmmakers Kelly and Tammy Rundle. They are here with me today. The film premieres on Thursday at the Putnam Museum in Davenport at 7 p.m. Dave Darby is also here, executive director of the Iowa Division of the Route 6 Tourist Association. And we would love to hear from you. Do you live along Route 6? Did you grow up along Route 6? What are some of your favorite sites? What are some of your questions? What are some of the stories that you've heard told over the years? Give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I want to play a little more sound from the film. And this is from, well, the Ladora area, also from Iowa City, but tell us a little bit about a woman whose work remained anonymous for many years. Let's hear a little bit.
Mildred Augustine was born in 1905 in Ladora, Iowa, delivered at home by her father, who was the town doctor. She says she hated dolls. She liked to play with the boys.
She said that she read all the books in the Ladora library and didn't much like the children's books and was inspired to write her own to fill in the gaps. She said, "I always wrote. I'd be writing when the undertaker comes to take me out the door." She published her first story when she was 12.
All right, and the woman they're talking about is actually Mildred Benson, and she wrote under the pen name Carolyn Keene. So she was the author who wrote the first Nancy Drew books, not all of the Nancy Drew books, but her identity remained secret for many, many years. She was also a working journalist for her entire life, and we're actually going to be talking about her more on Talk of Iowa, because there's a new book about her life that's coming out shortly. But as you were traveling across Iowa, how did Mildred Benson grab your attention?
I think, I don't know, Dave maybe didn't read Nancy Drew when he was growing up. Did you?
I did not. I'd certainly heard of her. Okay. And my sisters used to read it, but I had learned that she grew up in Ladora. Her house is right there on Highway 6, and I knew it would be an interesting a feature for the book and for people to know about as they drove through this little town.
Well, and I read Hardy Boys books and also some Nancy Drew, and I know Tammy read Nancy Drew. So I think, you know, for a lot of fans of that series as children, we thought there was someone named Carolyn Keene.
Right.
As we thought the other authors of those other books from the same publisher were real people. And they are real people, but they're just not that person. But the significant part about that story is perhaps just that she was prolific with her writing, both as a newsperson and as a person who wrote fiction, and that she wrote the first – she wrote 23, including the first several in the series, of the first 30 books. So people who studied this much better than we have say she's the one who defined Nancy Drew's character and gave her that independence that she had as a young woman in that era.
Well, and in the film, one of the guests that you had on the air talked about how it's kind of a quintessential Iowa story in a way because she was so incredibly influential and yet didn't get credit for it. And was she bitter about not getting credit for it? It seemed like she just kept laboring away and was proud of the work that she did.
I think later on, well, she saw how successful they were. You know, the Hardy Boys were successful, but when Nancy Drew came out, it pretty quickly eclipsed that success. It was much more successful. And so she saw that the publisher did well. She was contractually obligated to keep it a secret and did so, but struggled, you know, toward the end of her life to get credit for those books. And I believe now, as they are published, that her name does appear on the books that she wrote. So that was one thing that she was able to finally negotiate, I think, near the end of her life.
As you're traveling across Highway 6, I want to talk about the most famous story in just a moment. But is there a place that you consider to be the most visually stunning, Dave, in the state? Because, I mean, it does wind through some of the hillier parts of our state. I know everybody says Iowa's flat. That clearly is not the case. But what's your favorite vista?
Oh, goodness. You know, I think as you drive across 6 from Davenport to Iowa City, it is fairly straight and flat. But once you get west of here, it really starts showing its true colors. And I have a couple, probably three favorite spots. One, Tammy mentioned, the southwest part where it's literally like a roller coaster that winds out in front of you. But I love between Victor and Brooklyn. It's a beautiful, hilly, curvy road there. It's just fun to drive on. And I love between Adel, Iowa, and Dexter, Iowa, where the White Pole Road begins. And you drive through Redfield, and the pavement has this interesting pink hue to it. And the hills just wind around, and the road just does a dance with the land. You know, the interstate just blasts its way through. You know, we don't care if you own the land. We're putting this thing through. Progress is not going to be hindered. But in the original days, the roads paid respect to property lines.
Well, they had no choice.
Yeah. Well, and it was by design, too. So there was a lot of stair steps, and there was curving around, and they didn't have the technology to blast through the hills. It mm-hmm. cost too much money. So the roads have a lot more personality there than they do in the more straight and more modern roads. So those probably – my favorite stretch would probably be between Adel and Dexter. It's just so beautiful. And then, like Tammy mentioned, the southwest part, once you get towards Atlantic and you're on that final one-hour stretch to Council Bluffs, the road is like a roller coaster. And we've had a lot of people from our cruises remark afterwards, I had no idea Iowa could be so beautiful.
Let's go to the phones. Mike is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Mike.
Yes, hi there. Say, I was an antique dealer for many years, and I specialized in historical travel Americana paper, like from Route 66 and from the Lincoln Highway. And I had sold a couple of pieces of the Route 6 map, as you call it. They were actually marked Roosevelt Highway. And it's my contention that if it would have been referred to as the Roosevelt Highway, that the highway would not be a secret. And it would be better known like the Lincoln Highway or Route 66. Can you comment on that?
Well, it was known as the Roosevelt Highway all the way up until probably just after World War II. And then the Grand Army of the Republic group, which was a group of Civil War veterans who had gotten together after the war to make sure that the wives and widows and everyone got their benefits, they lobbied to have the highway renamed as the Grand Army of the Republic Highway, which was officially completed, I believe, in 1947. And that's – well, you will see the signs along the road today still.
I think that's a very good point, though. I think that possibly it might have been better known if it had stuck.
Yeah. I like the Roosevelt Highway.
Yeah. Changing names can really mess with history. All right. I want to play another clip from the movie. I've been teasing this story. And you mentioned driving to Dexter, Iowa. Mm-hmm. And outside of Dexter, Iowa, there was Iowa's first amusement park, which was Dexfield, right?
Yes, Dexfield Park.
Okay. And well, let's listen to a little clip. This is about something that happened after Dexfield Park had closed, but there was still a campground where people who used to go to this amusement park that was just a huge attraction before the Depression, a little campground where a lot of action took place with some very well-known figures in history, Bonnie and Clyde.
Marvell Feller was my father-in-law, and he was milking cows with his father and his uncle. Next thing they knew, that Clyde Barrow came up to the gate with a gun. And he says, I'm not here to hurt you, I just want your car. And then Marvell had to show Clyde how to run his 29 Plymouth so that they could get out of there.
All right, just a little moment. But I love that you actually found somebody who had a family connection to the time when Bonnie and Clyde were in Iowa. And Dave, do you want to take this? What brought Bonnie and Clyde to Iowa and to Dexter, Iowa, of all places?
Well, there had just been a shootout in somewhere, I think, around Kansas City, and they were kind of on the lam. And they stopped in Dexter, and they were at the drugstore there, which actually still exists. It's not open anymore, but it's still there. And they bought bandages and supplies, and they were strangers in town, so people obviously noticed
right?
Them. Yes.
Especially bloody strangers,
right.
I'm sure.
So eventually somebody had figured out that they were hid out in Dexfield Park, and the authorities got a posse together, and that is where the famous shootout took place, and it actually took the life of Clyde's brother, Buck. And they captured Buck's wife, Blanche, in the process. Bonnie and Clyde narrowly escaped on foot. I think Clyde actually had to carry Bonnie because she had sustained a leg injury prior to that. So it was a very narrow getaway. And they actually came back about a year later and robbed a bank in Stuart, Iowa, right on the next town over.
Was that vengeance? Is that how the story goes?
Or I think it was stupidity.
Right.
I think it was survival. They were just young kids. They really weren't that proficient at what they did. And I can't act as a proponent for them, but it's certainly a romantic story. There's a lot of love stories on Route 6 between George and Thelma, Bonnie and Clyde, and Ash Nelson, who planted the walnut trees.
So tell me about that.
He lived in Wilton, Iowa, and dated his wife in Durant, or was it vice versa? And it was a 5-mile trip by high wheel bicycle, and he would actually ride on the rails before the new highway was built and to court her. And then when they built the new highway, he planted 500 walnut trees alongside the new highway over the 5 miles. And during the course of this, his son, Thomas Nelson, who was an airmail pioneer with Charles Lindbergh, was killed in a plane crash. So it was also a memorial to him. So there's a lot of meaning to things along this road. It's our own little romantic highway, as one of our people would say.
Well, and so many of the legends that get passed around Iowa have something to do with Route 6. I mean, Bonnie and Clyde, that's one of those things that teenagers love to tell each other. Oh, Bonnie and Clyde were in Iowa.
Yes.
Did you encounter some of the stories that you knew about Iowa and then discovered, oh, and it has a Route 6 connection?
Well, that one, that's the main one, I guess, because we knew a little bit about the Bonnie and Clyde. Like Dave mentioned, the shootout that they were engaged in Platte City, and then they sort of fled north and wound up in that campground. And it was significant in terms of – it was a turning point, I guess, in their own story because it was the first time that members of the Barrow Gang were captured by authorities. It's amazing in a way that they got away because they had a big group of authorities. People came from as far away as Oskaloosa to form this posse. So it's a great story, and it's interesting because like our Villisca story, perhaps people in Dexter don't want to be known for the – Bonnie and Clyde shootout. And yet, that's kind of why people stop in.
Well, and the way that you tell the story in the film also makes it so relatable because of the man who was out walking and found the bloody cloth, that kind of thing. It does sound like something that could happen to anybody who walks a dog in the morning. Or
yeah, that's kind of scary, isn't it?
What were you going to say, Tammy?
Well, I was just going to say that Kelly had mentioned earlier that we, taking this journey, making this film, that we had been running into subjects that we had done before on film. And like you get to Atlantic and there are ties to the Villisca Axe murder, you know, in Atlantic. And, of course, the Iowa. We're all throughout Iowa, and we end up revisiting that a little bit. So it was kind of nice to be able to take the route and revisit those stories and the many friendships that we've made over the years.
Did you also – you talk about how your films find you. I know you're working on Barnes.
Yes, we are.
For another film. Did you find any other subjects that you may be pursuing in the future as you were traveling Highway 6?
I don't think we have. Not that I can think of. Sometimes they come to us later, but not so far.
So, Dave, obviously this has been a real labor of love for you, and you really want to get the word out about Highway 6 and get a lot more people to drive it. You haven't actually seen the film yet, right?
I have not. So I'm looking forward to it.
You'll see it Thursday night with the audience. Is that the plan?
That's the plan.
So as you think about this project, which obviously is something you really wanted to happen, what are your hopes for what this film will do?
Well, my hopes are that people will see this and it'll awake an urge to get off the interstate and travel that forgotten highway and see these great little places before they disappear on us. And I hope maybe even go beyond Iowa. Whenever they go somewhere, take that two-lane highway wherever it is, whether it's six or not six, and just see what the world looks like, you know, from a different vantage point rather than having the blinders on the interstate. Because really, driving somewhere on the interstate is kind of like taking a tour of a museum using an elevator. It doesn't make much sense. You're not going to see anything.
We have this message from someone who certainly has heard your message, but from David, my wife and several of our friends ride motorcycles all over the country. We always look for the scenic byway signs in Iowa and any other state we ride in, and we've certainly enjoyed riding Highway 6. He asks, is there any way to raise awareness using signage? And that's what you're trying to do, right?
That's correct, yes. We're signing the original route, and we're actually helping with the restoration of the Grand Army of the Republic signs as well, because most of those are well over 30 years old and they're getting faded. We're working with the Sons of the Union Civil War veterans on that project. And also there's a beautiful Grand Army of the Republic post that's been restored in Redfield, Iowa, which was named after a Civil War soldier who was killed in battle. And that's a beautiful place, and we're raising awareness for that as well. We're trying to drive people into these places so they can see the stories and see how special of a road we have right in our own home state.
And are you getting a lot of people interested in taking the retro road trip this year following the premiere of the film?
Absolutely. We usually count on around 100 cars, and it's like this great classic car parade across Iowa. And it's so fun because you're driving along and people are just waving at you and they're enjoying you driving by. And it's like being in a parade. You're like you're celebrities. And it's as much fun for the people in their cars as it is for the people watching the cars go by. And they know that it's for them, for their towns, because they live on that highway.
All right. You can find out more about the retro road trip and the history of Route 6 at usroute6iowa.org. Also, you can find out more about the movie. Highway6movie.com is the website for that. And I've been mentioning the big premiere in Davenport on September 17th. There will be some other showings. You can find out information about that as well on that website. Dave Darby, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Charity.
Dave Darby, Executive Director of the Iowa Division of the Route 6 Tourist Association. Kelly and Tammy Rundle, thank you so much.
Thank you, Charity.
Thanks.
Kelly and Tammy Rundle, the filmmakers behind the new film, River to River, Iowa's Forgotten Highway. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.